Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, today we have a special show. All of you folks in the New York area, Northeast, listen up. We have a guest here today who's going to tell us the facts about what's going on in this Verizon communication workers' strike. I have Don Trementozzi, who is president of CWA Local 1400, and I believe Don is also on one of the bargaining committees. Don, you with us?
I am, Jack. How are you today?
Okay, very good. Don, we really welcome you here, and we're looking forward for you to tell us the straight facts about what's going on, because as we all know, the media does not report what unions and workers' positions are and what the facts are. They cloud things up. They make it look like management is the poor victim here, and the poor company can't afford an increase, and they got to send our jobs overseas, et cetera, et cetera. Before we get going, Don, what I'd like you to do is to tell us, you know, what are the issues and what are the differences? Let's start there. But before we do, I just want to let everybody know here. A recent report just came out that said household income tumbles in a majority of U.S. cities in the last few years and even decades. Yes, more than 80%, in other words, 80% of the labor force is really those folks making $100,000 and below, which is the working class, mostly the middle working class here, which CWA members represent, more than 80%. Of these workers have experienced income, net income declines after adjusted for inflation in recent years, certainly since 2008-09. But even before that, this is all going on. Why? Well, you know, for decades now, since Ronald Reagan, and promoted by Bill Clinton as well, and George W. Bush, offshoring, sending our jobs, decent paying jobs, in manufacturing, construction, and communication, so forth, sending them overseas. Number one cause of the decline. Number two cause is creating all these so-called contingent jobs, low-paid service, part-time, temp, contract, on-call, et cetera, jobs. And now the third wave is this so-called gig economy, right, where your jobs are going to be temporary, part-time, contract, but you're going to have to provide all the tools and capital. The employer doesn't even provide that anymore. All they do is have software, and they send you, and you provide all the tools, all the capital, all the equipment, and you get lower wages, and you get no benefits. This is the third wave that's now hitting. You know, Uber, Lyft, all that. Well, that's just the tip of the iceberg. So three waves of onslaught here against working folks in this country, destroying their means of livelihood, and it's going on and on. And at the same time, what are we doing? We're giving $5 trillion in tax cuts to investors and corporations who turn around and stock buybacks and dividends of $5 trillion. Well, no wonder we got income inequality. No wonder, according to University of California economists, 97% of all the net income gains since 2008, 97% have gone to the wealthiest 1%. Well, when you destroy decent jobs, right, at the same time you're giving trillions of dollars in capital gains distributions to the rich, no wonder you have this kind of income inequality and trends that are growing. This study came out here just a few days ago, and it said median incomes, in other words, that's the working class, the working middle class, median incomes fell in four-fifths of the 229 metropolitan areas in the United States. This is a Pew study, you know, a legitimate study. In other words, it's fallen in 203 regions, metropolitan areas in the U.S., declining incomes, 203 of the 229. Whoa, recovery, yeah, what another lie that is. And then we got these politicians who promise us, You know, they're pandering to working and middle-class folks here, telling us what they're going to do. And pandering is the word, because I don't trust a word they say. I don't trust any of them. They tell us what we want to hear. They think what we want to hear. And then they go and do what they're going to do anyway, which is reward their big buck contributors. You know, a good example here is Donald Trump, you know, trying to court the working class in West Virginia and everywhere. Well, you know where Donald Trump is today? He's in Las Vegas talking to Sheldon Summer, another big billionaire, all these real estate billionaires who are so anti-union, anti-working, working class, that you can't even begin to describe their attack on everybody else except their own billionaire class. That's where he's going. That's where he's going to get his money, plus his own money, billionaire money. You know, he's telling us all these lies. The only guy that you might be able to trust is Bernie Sanders. And I say might because I'm watching Bernie. Let's see if Bernie throws in the towel and folds everything back into the Democratic Party. And, well, we'll see. We'll see. That's another story, another show. But let's get to the meat of this particular show, and that's, let's find out what's really going on in this CWA strike and what the real issues are and what's happened since the workers walked out there. And, boy, we got a good guest here to tell us the facts from the horse's mouth here. Don, take it. Take it away here. What are the issues in this strike?
Well, first of all, Jack, thanks for having me on. And as you know, we're in our fifth week of the strike. And, you know, I got to say, for the most part, the media, which doesn't usually get it right, has gotten our issues straight for the most part. I'd have to say that the politicians and elected leaders, especially the Democratic leaders, have gotten it right and joined us on picket lines. I mean, it's unprecedented when you have two presidential candidates joining us on a picket line, and one being Bernie Sanders, really calling out the CEO of this company on national TV on the New York debate. So, you know, I think even the public understands the issues. I think we've got our message out there, which is very factual, which I'll go down the line. I will tell you, I am the president of Local 1400 in New England for CWA, and, you know, there are two unions in this fight, CWA and the IBW. And, you know, I sit on the regional bargaining team in New York, and we have been for the last 11 months until the strike was called. I mean, they're just hell-bent on taking away and moving jobs overseas and really taking away all of the things we fought for the last 50 years. And, you know, we're proud to say that we finally drew a line in the sand here, and I think the public really has supported us. I mean, really, it seems to be what's out there about income equality and overseas, you know, outsourcing jobs and, you know, American manufacturers and other companies just outsourcing as recent as Oreo cookies, right, going to Mexico. So I will tell you factually, one of the major issues in this strike is outsourcing of call center jobs. And so I'll give you something hot off the press. We were contacted by the Philippine workers that are actually doing struck work in the Philippines, in Manila, and they called CWA a few weeks ago, and I'm going to tell you their story. So we found out, you know, the company is trying to hide the fact that there's very little outsourcing and very little calls going overseas. Well, it's just not true. We got called, and we found out that these workers are very disgruntled. They're quitting by the minute. They were promised incentives to do struck work. And so we sent a coalition, in fact, four members that work in the call center, one of them being my member, the couple being from the New York area locals, to the Philippines. They flew out last Sunday, and they're actually flying home today. And what we found out was they're making $1.78 an hour to do what we do every day professionally. They don't get it right. They're not trained like we're trained. And they were promised all these incentives, and Verizon has reneged. So these workers are joining us on a picket line in the Philippines in front of the call centers. And what happened was we actually visited one of the Verizon headquarters out there, And from what I understand from social media, because we haven't talked to anybody yet because they're in flight, but they were chased by armed security, Verizon security personnel, chased down the highway. They stopped the vehicle, surrounded the vehicle. They used their machine guns and banged on the doors. Our members didn't open up the van that they were in. The police came. They all went to the police station. They settled whatever they were settling. But these are the tactics that this company has stooped to and try to put fear in members and fear in workers. And we're just not going to tolerate it. So, I mean, they're on their way back, and we have a story to tell there as well. Because, you know, the public hears about calls going overseas, but then the other part of the story is, what are the working conditions? These are like slave labor working conditions. It's just unbearable. It's just unbelievable. So that's kind of where we're at on outsourcing. I'll pause for a minute if you got some questions.
Yeah, yeah. Explain to the listeners here the trends that have been occurring up to now in outsourcing that have made it such an issue with you folks, and how do the jobs get outsourced, call center jobs? Explain for the listeners. They may not understand how a service job actually gets outsourced since it's not manufacturing.
Yeah, so we work in call centers for the most part. We're not, you know, I don't represent the outside technicians, but the outside technicians are also in this fight. But, you know, I represent the inside workers that handle residential sales and service calls. So, for an example, on the wireline side of the business, if you were going to call over your phone bill, over your Fios bill, over your internet bill, or anything like that, we answer those calls. Or if you wanted to purchase sales and service, like, you know, you want to purchase Fios TV or you want to purchase internet, we handle that. We handle that on the IBW in New England. Happens they handle that on the business side. In New York, CWA handles most of everything, the outside and inside. And so when a customer calls in, for the most part, those calls go to our call centers. Well, over the last contract, they've been outsourcing to all of these countries, Mexico, the Philippines, Costa Rica, and they're doing overflows to these call centers, which I just described are horrendous, making low money, $1.78 an hour. And, you know, they don't do the job as well as we do the job. And I know as a consumer myself, you know, we get frustrated calling overseas because, you know, sometimes the barrier or the language barrier is difficult. They don't understand like we understand. We're trained, you know, years of training. You know, the outside technicians, you know, buddy up, and all, it's like a 5-year apprenticeship. And here they are right now hiring replacement workers to do that work. We had an incident yesterday in New England where one of the replacement workers accelerated through the picket line. He hit one of the IBEW strikers, also hit one of the police officers. He was hospitalized. He's still hospitalized. We found out that this is 7 o'clock in the morning. He was on his fourth DUI. He was driving a company vehicle without a license. And he was drunk at 7 o'clock in the morning. And we're finding, and we had a couple incidents in New York where replacement workers took out a machete. Another one took out a hammer to attack and assault our workers. And it's just unbelievable. These Verizon replacement workers are not vetted. They got criminal records. The list goes on and on and on. So we've asked for our public representatives, the governors in both states, to actually stop all of the replacement workers until they're vetted properly. These are people that are going to customers' homes that are criminals, and it's just unbelievable how they're, you know, and, you know, the people that built this company made $18.6 billion in profit last year. We're not talking about a company that's broke here. And, you know, how much is enough? The CEO makes over $18 million a year, not counting all his incentives and, you know, all the perks that they get, right, and stock options. It's just, it's a disgrace. You know, they cut off health insurance for 110,000 members and their families. We have 40,000 on strike, but their families are affected. You know, they're just a disgrace.
Well, $18.6 billion, and they want to send your jobs overseas for paying, you know, in order to pay even less. I mean, what is it? Just greed here that they want to make more? I mean, they can certainly afford it, as you indicated. Why are they sending these jobs outside unless it's just to break the union here? And by the way, we used to call them strike breakers and scabs. I mean, you're being very polite here.
Well, I'm being polite. I'm on the radio, but when I'm giving a speech, I'm not very polite. So
yeah,
I'll call them a scab if you want me to.
No, that's okay. I just want to let everybody know that the behavior of these people is despicable, and it sounds are really the company is really scraping the bottom of the barrel to get some of these people here your jobs. But what's behind this? Is it trying to bust the union, weaken the union? It certainly couldn't be that they can't afford it.
Yeah, it's just look. I keep saying Verizon greed has no boundaries. It's all about greed, and if they could get rid of the unions, they would certainly do that in a heartbeat. Unfortunately for them, it's not just the wireline side on the on strike, but our wireless workers on strike. Now, we don't have a big dent in the wireless unionized market here, although we're working on it. In my local, we organized a year and a half ago, just I'll give you this one, a year and a half ago, and we're fighting for a first contract in Everett, Massachusetts for one of our Verizon Wireless stores. And there's like 9 stores in Brooklyn that unionized about a year or so ago. And so we're all fighting for a first contract. And so at that table, they're arrogant, just as they are at the other table. Just to give you an idea, it takes you, if you're a Verizon worker, wireless worker in the store, 17 years to get to top pay. 17 years, that's halfway to retirement. And top pay is $14 an hour. So, and they seem to like it, they said. They like the flexibility of doing whatever they feel like doing.
Yeah, well, you see, that flexibility plays into this whole idea of contingent part-time contract gig work. You know, management likes to not have full-time unionized workforces because they can just push them around a lot easier and manipulate them. And, of course, the workers pay the price for all that flexibility, they call it, I guess, right? We need management flexibility.
Just think about this. Those workers who work 12-hour days in some cases, you've been to a wireless store, and the lines are out the door, they get no paid breaks. They only get a 30-minute unpaid lunch. No paid breaks. We actually, when we started negotiating, we thought it was illegal, but we found out, at least in the state of Massachusetts, that it's not illegal not to have a paid break. It was unbelievable to us. So, of course, we're trying to get them paid breaks. They're not interested in even that. They weren't even interested in a union bulletin board in the building, in the break room. It's that's how arrogant they are.
Yeah, well, that sounds like they're just trying to break the union and at least break its spirit, if nothing else. Okay, so outsourcing. How many jobs have you estimate you've lost to outsourcing since the last contract? You got any estimate of that?
I can give you a percentage. It's about at least 30, maybe plus, 30-plus percentage, and I think I'm lowballing it, of call volume. So if call volume in the state of Massachusetts is, let's call it 1 million calls a month, almost 40% of those calls are being outsourced. So if you add up New York, New England, the mid-Atlantic states, everybody that's affected in this strike right now, and that's all the way from Massachusetts to Maryland and Virginia, you're talking probably just millions and millions and millions of calls a month. Probably in excess of maybe 3,000 workers overseas.
Mm. Yeah, well, if you don't stop them now, it sounds like in one or two more contracts, that'll be the end of all the jobs. What other issues besides outsourcing, which is a job security issue, it's not a pay issue, right? What other issues are on the table unresolved that are of major import to the union?
Yeah, money's not the issue in this contract, just so it's clear to your listeners. We're really just trying to keep what we have. We're trying to stop the bleeding when it comes to the outsourcing, and we want more of that work to be back into the centers. But one of the other big issues is the outside linemen they want the ability to move them across the borders to what, out of state for, you know, up to 60 days at a time. That was on the table all the way to the end. They've modified that a little bit, but they still want the ability to move people to other states up to 60 days at a time. And so they don't care if you're away from your family and all of that. They just don't care about it. And, you know, we caught them once in an arbitration. We actually subpoenaed, you know, all of their emails when they wanted to close one of the centers in the IBW in New England from Western Mass and move everybody to Rhode Island. And that's probably a two-hour ride in traffic one way to work, where they might have been 15 minutes from their workplace. And in their emails, they say, we know that 30% of the workers will quit because they won't do it. They won't. So they actually have a master plan on how to get rid of people, mm-hmm. whether it's forcing them to be in another state or what have you. It's just unbelievable.
What are the major issues on the table that the management wants, other than you know, this moving folks around and outsourcing? Do they have certain demands? I mean, is it kind
That's a demand. The outsourcing is a demand. Mm-hmm. Closing centers is a demand. They have about, I don't know, between the mid-Atlantic states and us in New York and New England, they probably have about at least, I don't know, I would say 12, 15 call centers that they want to close and force people anywhere from 80 to 100 miles to another call center, one way. And so they're trying to create mega centers, in some cases over state boundaries, and, you know, which forces people to quit. And, you know, and they don't want to replace people that quit, you know, so yeah, they can when they quit or people leave or they, you know, retire, they don't want to replace them. They just want to outsource more of that work. And that's what we're trying to stop here. And, you know, there's healthcare is a little bit of an issue here because, you know, we pay premiums, we pay costs, you know, co-pays and all of this, plan design changes. And now they want to pretty much double what the premiums are, and they want to decimate the plan designs. They want the retirees that have never gotten a raise since they retired. In some cases, you know, people have been retired 20 years, 30 years. They've never gotten a raise, and they now want them to pay big bucks towards their premiums and also plan to design changes that could, you know, devastate them, you know. So those are some of those big issues at the table here.
On fixed income, sure. Well, you mentioned 40,000 walked out here a few weeks ago. How is it holding? You have anybody going back, or are you guys all holding strong there at 40?
Yeah, well, we're holding strong. The members are solid. I just did. We had a rally the other day in Boston. As you can see on social media, probably New York is, you know, everybody's solid. The company has indicated that 1,000 people, you know, are working. Well, what we found out, that's out of the 40,000, and what we found out is they're counting people that are on disability. And mm-hmm. if you were on disability prior to the strike, then you're still an active employee, so to speak, until you come off disability. So they're not actually working and crossing the picket line. They're just on disability and unable to return to work yet. And if their disability is over, then they can join us on the picket lines.
I see. Okay. What's the significance, you think, of this this fight for the broader picture for your union going forward and for the union movement in this country? You see this as a sort of significant struggle here that has implications?
I think it could be historic. I mean, we're going to win this fight, and maybe these greedy companies will take notice that they're just not going to be able to push us or any other unions or even the unorganized around. And maybe, you know, maybe this will increase union membership when they show that our cause is just and right. And this is not just a fight for unionized workers. It's for middle-class workers, you know, that every day are at will. You know, management can do whatever they want to you. You know, maybe this country will wake up, you know, especially, you know, Bernie Sanders' message is right. You know, it's $15 an hour fight. All of this stuff is just, I think people have had enough, don't you?
Yeah, well, there are all kind of signs everywhere that folks are waking up and they're, you know, enough is enough. And you can see it reflected in the election, in the polls going on. This massive support for Sanders, who is speaking to these issues, and now Hillary, of course, is moving in Sanders' path, saying some of the same things. And even on the Trump side, you find his where he differs from his other conservatives is that he's speaking to the working class. He's trying a Reagan crossover, you know, blue collar vote that Reagan did in 1980. It's very similar. And he's getting Trump is getting support in the working class, and that's what's causing the rest of the Republican establishment heartburn. You know, you're not supposed to say protect Social Security. You're not supposed to say some of the other things that Trump is saying. Of course, he's just saying these things. I don't believe a word about what he's saying. He's pandering. He's trying to get votes. It's reflective of that. You know, a lot of his support that the other Republicans didn't get are working class support. And of course, we see the Sanders steamroller here. And where is he getting support? He's getting support from 18 to 34 young working folks who are tired of these part-time contingent jobs with no security and you know, no benefits and so forth, and you know, can't afford rents and living at home with their folks, and even though some of them got degrees, no prospects for the future, and it looks bleak for the young ones. And I think that's all reflective of what's going on here. And it sounds to me like I would imagine a lot of your call center folks are probably in that group of 34 and under. What's your assessment of that?
We have a large group of members that fit that, you know, from really 21 to, you know, 40 years old. But, you know, we do have older workers. But, you know, Bernie Sanders, right now I'm in New Hampshire. That's where my office is. But I represent members in Vermont, Maine, and Massachusetts, and as well as New Hampshire. And Bernie's been a friend of our locals for many, many years. He's walked with us on picket lines. He's the real deal. You know, the guy speaks the truth. He says it the way it is. He's called CEOs in the past and told them to get back to the table. You know, so, you know, I know Hillary is trying to take his message. You know, I don't, in my opinion, think she's as pure as he is by a long shot. And Donald Trump will say anything to get elected on any given day. The story changes. He's for an increase of minimum wage. He was against increasing minimum wage. He's trying to get the workers vote, you know, middle class. I think our voters are smart enough to figure that out at the end, where he's coming from. But, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, we're fighting the fight every day. And it's not easy. You know, our members are 5 weeks without a paycheck, but we're fighting that fight because we believe in the cause. And we believe that if we don't do something now, you know, it could be, look, at the end of the day, We always hope to have a retirement. And besides retirement, when our kids get old enough, we think they should have jobs like we had with benefits and good paying jobs. And, you know, and if we don't fight the fight, our kids and our grandchildren aren't going to have anything.
Oh, that's obvious. You know, the fastest growing part of the labor force are folks 65 to 74. In other words, having to go back to work because they can't make it on Social Security, and certainly can't make it on 401k plans, which are a joke after they've destroyed real pension plans. You know, your union and a few others are the only ones, and teachers and public employees, that have real retirement plans anymore, but they're targeting them. They're going after them, and that's a big problem. You know, the whole assault here of changing labor markets and changing structure of labor management relations is just devastating working folks here, and it doesn't appear that it's going to slow down unless somebody, your union and others, stand up and say that's enough.
The history, if anybody really wants to look up the history of 401ks, that was always supposed to be a supplement to your pension plans, and somehow this country and these corporate greedy pigs have decided to convince everybody that we don't need pensions, we just need 401ks that you contribute, and maybe if they feel like it, they'll contribute, unless they're forced to do anything. You know, the company, you know, Verizon constantly turns around and says, oh, we gave you good benefits, we've given you this, you got this, you got it, you work for a great company. Well, let me set the record straight. They've never given us shit, actually. We had to fight for everything over the last 50 years, and members have died for the cause. We've had people run over on a picket line and die fighting a fight to get what we have today. So,
yeah, well, you know, the retirement thing, folks aren't aware. What's the average amount in a 401k plan for everybody? $18,000. How about 60-year-olds? What's the average they have 401ks? About $50,000. How are you going to retire on $50,000? And Social Security averages about $1,100 a month. You know, we're condemning our young folks, our young workers, to jobs and incomes that are barely sufficient to survive. They can't raise families on them hardly. And we're condemning our old folks, older folks, to poverty in retirement. And we're sending the middle class, for those who are in the middle, jobs overseas. Still. Sending them overseas. And those that they can't send overseas, we're turning them into a gig, sharing economy, part-time, contingent jobs. I mean, it's just a devastating on all fronts here. And you know, no wonder we have income inequality going on. You know, incomes are falling for even the middle class, and at the same time, the wealthiest 1%, you know, trillions of dollars are being funneled their way. And who's talking about it? I don't know. I the only guy I hear talking about it is Sanders. You know, and Hillary, as you indicate and I indicated, is you know, following in the wake, carefully calibrating what she says to try to sound like Sanders without offending her rich bank and financial institution contributors, you know. And of course, as you said with Trump, you know, he just says whatever he has to say to whomever he has to say and changes it the next day, and he won't even reveal his tax returns. That ought to tell you something, you know. He's hiding stuff. Anyway, we can talk about these politicians, but everybody, you know, should have, you know, understand where they're coming from. And the only way for working folks to defend themselves is what you folks are doing, saying no more concessions and save our jobs. I don't know. That sounds like the slogan of your strike: save our jobs, huh?
It certainly is. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, right?
Right. How's CWA doing organizing the wireless workers? I know you guys have been attempting for quite some time with some successes, but Verizon's doing everything it can to prevent, you know, that the core of its next business from being organized. Any luck going on there?
Well, you know, we're right now picketing every wireless store that the company owns in the country. We've got every wireless store covered from day one of the strike, from Massachusetts to Virginia, and all of the corporate stores. And, you know, we're trying to show the workers there that are not union, that we're not the bad guys, that we're still fighting for them. Because we know that in the unionized stores that we did organize, that whatever we get for them, you know, the company no doubt will give it to the non-union folks, because they're going to try to say how great they are and they don't really need a union. So we think, you know, when this is all said and done and we get a contract, that they'll see that and we'll, you know, we'll have a huge organizing success here.
Well, best of luck in that, because, you know, you're going to have to roll them into your union if you want even more bargaining strength than that you have.
Well, just so you know, I mean, AT&T, all of AT&T is union, the wireline and the wireless side. I represent AT&T wireless workers in every store in Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire. They are all 100% unionized through the entire country.
Oh, that's great. But Verizon's holding out, huh? They won't recognize the union? Is that the situation?
They don't want the union that they have now, Jack. Mm.
Okay, they want to get rid of it. All right. Tell us more about Verizon. You read in the paper that they've got these huge profits and that they're trying to buy up other companies and so forth with these huge profits. Tell us more about how they could afford to keep these jobs in the country, but they don't want to. What's the profit picture? You mentioned $18 billion in profit. Was that just last year?
Yeah, just last year it was $18.6 billion in profit. They've been making $1.3 billion a month for the last 18 months in profit, and that's after all the bills are paid. But they have no problem going buying AOL and Yahoo Yahoo just recently, I think, for $2 billion. They want what they want. They want to be a monopoly, which even though there was deregulation, which was probably the worst thing that happened, but deregulation in the 70s and, in 80s. And, they just want to become a monopoly again, right? If you really look at it, there's not too many companies that, have cell service in the U.S., right? There's like four companies that matter. And, they want to monopolize everything, but they want it their way. They don't want a unionized workforce. They want to pay you $1.78 an hour, and they don't want to pay you any benefits, apparently. That's why they're trying to do all this business overseas. So that's the company that they want to be. But they want the American public to buy their products, which, by the way, isn't cheap, right? The average phone bill for the house between, if you still have a phone, but the phone, the house phone, the internet, and the, Fios TV is probably average about $190 a month. Then you add your cell phones in. Everybody in the house has a cell phone. That's about $250 a month. But they want to pay workers $1.78 an hour. Well, if they paid everybody that, nobody would be able to buy their services and products. So, I think they should be a little smarter to realize the more money the middle class makes, the more you can afford these services, right? For any company.
Yeah, well, they don't look that long term. They just look at how much they can squeeze in the short term. But why would they buy Yahoo? What's the connection there? Why would they want Yahoo? I mean, that's an internet online. Is it for the apps, applications that they want to integrate into their own network? Any thoughts on that?
I have no idea. I guess there's a lot of money in the advertisement of online stuff, and Yahoo's a big email provider, right? And AOL is, and I think they just want to gobble everything up and have complete control over any kind of communications.
Mm-hmm. What kind of support are you getting from other unions there in your fight in New York and elsewhere?
It's phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. I mean, the National AFL-CIO is, Trumker is 100% with us and called to arms all the unions to help us around the country. We're even getting support around the world from, in France and Germany and the unions out there. And, it's been nothing short of amazing, the amount of public support, union support, middle class support. People are dropping off pizzas and food and drinks and beverages at the picket lines. People have dropped off money to pay bills and stuff. It's just unbelievable. It's really short of phenomenal, actually.
And other than walking the picket line and statement of support, has Sanders or Hillary promised to introduce any legislation or anything with regard to this issue? Or is it just,
Well, that's above my
pay grade. We're with you guys. Good luck.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know that we've had every U.S. senator, Democratic senator, I should point that out, in the Northeast all the way to Virginia, sign on to a letter to the CEO, Lo McAdams, urging them to get back to the table and negotiate a fair agreement. We have our congressional delegation signing on as we speak right now from here to Virginia. And actually around the entire country, that's not even associated with, having any of their delegation as part of that state, right? Any striking workers, but they feel the issue is right and just, and they've been signing on as well. So that's another, we've had great support there.
Yeah, that would be even greater if they were to do some kind of legislation to prevent outsourcing of jobs.
Yeah, well, that's a big one, you know, but as you, this Congress, you can't get anything passed. You can't even buy a pencil without a fight.
So that's true.
You know?
Yep, that's true. Okay, well, what other issues here that you would like to bring up? By the way, tell people where they could go online, the listeners, to find out more about the issues and the progress of the strike and of negotiations and so forth. Where could they go? Is there, you know, a public website, a union website or something?
Yeah, I mean, you could go to the National Union, CWA, the Communication Workers of America .org. And I think it's abbreviated CWA.org. And you could go to that website. That's got the latest information. In fact, the Philippine story is on there right now. So that's real time. I mean, my website is CWALocal1400.org. You could go on that website. There's places with CWA.org where you can donate. We're asking for donations because our members, IBW specifically, they don't have a strike fund. We do, but it's not, you know, it's not a lot of money, a couple hundred a week. But, yeah, there's donations that you can help out with. But that's where you can really get all the information.
Okay. Is the union adopted any position yet about boycotting Verizon and its services and its stores yet? Is that
We just announced that we're looking for members and family to switch over to AT&T because that's the only unionized wireless company in America. And we're asking people to switch from Verizon services and products over to AT&T.
Is the FSAO talking about a national boycott yet or waiting to see what happens a little bit more?
I think that's in talks right now. I think it's ready to happen. I haven't got the latest memo. Everything's happening so quick here, you know?
Sure, yeah. How about, are the local unions involved here welcoming other support on the picket line, or are you trying to keep this just union members at this point?
No, we've had many, many, many different organizations join us in New York City, in New York, upstate New York, New England, all the way to Virginia on the picket lines, and politicians. And, you know, we've had average, families show up on the picket lines that, you know, maybe came from a union family or understand the issues or not union but support our cause. So, yeah, we've had all that. It's just been fantastic.
Great. Well, it sounds like you guys are still holding solid there, and this thing's going to go on a while. Any glimmers of adjustment in the company's position here, or are they just stonewalling you guys at this point?
Well, we know we're killing them. We know we're hurting them really bad. We know that their sales in the Verizon Wireless stores are down almost by 82%. That's all they really care about, by the way, is the wireless side. And, you know, Wall Street, you know, the next quarter, if they report that, you know, they're down that many units, et cetera, I mean, their stock price is going to plummet. I mean, every unit sold in the wireless sector, it matters a lot. And we know that there's stores that typically you might have an hour and a half to 2 hour wait for services. There's nobody in the parking lot. So the public is supporting that. You have a few people that trickle in. Most of it's repair stuff from what we're seeing. And, you know, so we are hurting them. And, you know, we don't have to hurt them. The goal is to get a fair contract. But right now they're hurting us. They're hurting our families. We're going without pay, without health care. Life insurance has been terminated, the group plans that we had. So, I mean, you know, they're hurting us. We're going to have to earn them back, and that's exactly what we plan on doing, and that's what we are doing.
On the outsourcing, is the union's position halt all outsourcing, or is there some sort of proposal where you would slowly bring the jobs back? What's the union proposal on the table with regard to the outsourcing issue? Can you describe that?
Yeah, without getting all too much in the weeds here with the details. The bottom line is they, they always had the ability to have commercials on TV with a 1-800 number, and there was a percentage of those calls that went to contractors. However, for the most part, until really the last few years, they were U.S.-based contractors, right? Call centers that weren't union in the U.S. And they moved them and shifted that call, you know, those call centers over typically to the, you know, Philippines, Mexico, Dominican Republic, and all of those areas. And so you can see that over the last probably 5 or 6 years, you know, it's really noticeable now to, you know, and we have the documents that we ask for from Verizon to show where the calls are going and all that. So, you know, we know it factually. And so the last contract, it was, you know, 18% of the work could be contracted out. And but we had it in a pecking order where it had to go to a union, you know, when the call came in, it had to go to a union center first. All the union centers before it could go out. And now they actually wanted 100% of the work up until just before the strike. They wanted the ability to outsource 100% of the work. And they came back to the table finally just, you know, during the strike here and just before the strike, they put a number that they wanted 40 to 50% of the work. So they're giving us 40 to 50% of the work back. Guaranteeing it instead of, you know, 80, 90% of the work that we had guaranteed.
I see. Instead of just overflowing outside your bargaining unit, now they want to just split it. In other words,
right.
regular calls.
Right.
That's interesting. Mm. Okay. Well, any demands on your part that they should hire so many more workers? And I mean, if they have to hire them, then they have to keep the work here, right?
Yeah. So we do have a demand at the table that we want contract and work brought back into the bargaining units that you know that they've been outsourcing and they've given us notice on recent contracting of work. Pole work and some other call centers work that we have. I give you an example. We have a disability center in Massachusetts. They handle all the disabled community from here to Virginia. And let's call it 1 million calls a month come in. They want the ability to move 100% of those calls to a non-union overseas center. And they said at the table that they believe that 99% of those disabled customers aren't really disabled, that can be handled by anybody. That only 1% really needs special equipment like TTY and video conferencing. So even after 30 years, probably close to 30 years, they've had this center in Massachusetts, and they've earmarked these customers as hard of hearing, et cetera, and the call takes longer. They have said at the table, and I've questioned them myself, that they don't believe they're handicapped anymore, that 99% of them, of those calls can go to the general population, including overseas.
Well, how the hell do they know? Are they doctors? How the hell do they know about the disability of people on a phone?
It's a disgrace. It's just a disgrace.
And
they're the ones that actually earmark those customers as special needs, right? That the call takes longer. You got to, have sensitivity training around who handles those calls. And now, all of a sudden, they don't think they're disabled customers anymore. So, I mean, that's what we're dealing with.
It sounds to me that there may be some legal angle here with the Disability Act and so forth that you could file some sort of charge while negotiations are going on. It smells to me like they're if that's their position there, that they're violating the Disabilities Act somehow. Anyway, that's just my
We're doing question. Everything and everything with filing charges and whatever avenues we can to protect and get this contract done.
All right. Of the 40,000 who are out, how many would you say are call center workers?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say, I would say there was maybe 50-50, maybe 60.
Oh, that many, huh?
Mm. Yeah.
So we're looking at tens of thousands of jobs at stake here, potentially.
Yeah, because you have repair centers. Those are calls the centers that handle repair calls. You have centers that handle the Fios TV repairs and adding, Showtime and HBO and different products on there. You have the centers that handle the residential calls. You have centers that handle collection calls. You have centers that handle the business calls, small, medium, and large business. So, yeah, I'd have to say probably 60%.
Well, that's a big number there. Hmm. Okay, and do you IBEW, the other union, they're mostly outside or inside?
Yeah, they were there's a big local in New Jersey and in New England, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island. The IBW is bigger than what CWA is in these states, and they handle outside and inside, and I handle inside. And in New York, pretty much 99% of the work, all the workers in New York are CWA. And, you know, and then, you know, all the other states are pretty much CWA.
What's the geographic area involved here for listeners so they know who to boycott? Obviously, New England and New York. Does it go beyond that? Does it go
all the way from Massachusetts to Virginia?
To Virginia, okay. So New Jersey, does that include Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Maryland,
okay.
East Washington, D.C., all the way to Virginia.
Oh, okay, so that's a broad area. Those who are listening here, you know who to boycott, and you don't need an official boycott notice to start the process.
One of the things I'd advise your listeners absolutely is with the criminal records of these scab workers, don't let them in your house. I mean, I wouldn't let them in. They're not Verizon qualified, trained, scrutinized, background checked employees. These are people that are just hiring, apparently. And so if I was having, a repair call right now, I would not be letting any one of those people in my house for your safety, your own personal safety.
Yeah, that's, I'm sure there are some shady characters who sign on with this just to scope out the houses that they go to, and after the strike is over, they may just come back and visit you again. You have to be careful about that.
In some cases, they're doing it now.
Yeah, they're casing it out now. So I would certainly not allow them in. They're not investigated, vetted, or typical hiring process. They just pick people off the street when you have these strike breakers like this, and you don't know who you're getting, right?
Right.
Well, that's a good point for folks. Again, those who are listening, if you want more information, go to CWA.org or go to Don's locals website. Is that CWA local1400.org again, Don?
Yeah, yes, it is. Yep.
Okay, CWA local1400, one string there, .org, and find out what's going on, and find out where you can go and help. If we don't get into a habit in this country of helping others who are under the gun, we're going to remain fragmented. That's our biggest problem here. We're all fragmented, doing our own little thing, single issue this, single issue that. And, we got our little protests with 100 people here, 200 people there. Not that those protests aren't justified, but unless they come together, nothing's going to really change. They got to come together here in a broad-based movement, and we've got to have collective pressure. We can't keep doing it individually, and that even goes for local unions and local strikes. They've got to, as they say, out in the longshore, out here in the West Coast, an injury to one is an injury to all. Until we understand that, and we keep fighting our own little fights in our own little backyards, we're not going to get anywhere, and they're going to keep beating us down as they are and have been doing for three decades now. Anyway, you've heard me talk about that on this show, and I'll continue talking about that. And also, in my view, it leads to the need for a new kind of a party here, grassroots, bottom up. And maybe Sanders can light that fire. I don't know. We'll see. But the fire needs to be lit, because fighting individual battles here and there, it's just a whack-a-mole kind of a thing, and they just keep putting out those little fires that we might light and laughing at us as they take their dividend and stock checks to the bank. And the rest of us are fighting for just our jobs, like this outsourcing issue here. Part of this triple devastation of the American working class here, of outsourcing and offshoring and contingent jobs and now the gig economy. It's like three waves are drowning us and we got to stop it somehow. But we're not going to stop it by individual fights, battles against this here and there. You know, the taxi cab drivers can strike all they want against Uber, but unless they have allies, their jobs are gone. And the same with custodian workers, you know, hotel workers and so forth. That's all going to be Uberized here. And we're all going to be private contractors using our own vehicles or our own tools and so forth and getting paid chump change, while the companies that control the software and the location and the jobs, you know, just send us out to work a little bit here, work a little bit there. You know, we barely get by, and they just rake in all the profits from the top, just like Verizon apparently is doing, $18.6 billion profit, and they're fighting over whether to pay a decent living wage or $1.78 an hour. I mean, that's so obscene, you know. Where have we come to when that is what we're facing here? Okay. Well, I want to thank you, Don, for coming on and telling us, you know, what the facts are here and what the issues are and where things are. And, you know, if the strike continues any length of time or something important develops and you want to come back on the show and tell the folks we have a pretty good listenership in the New York area here for the Progressive Radio Network, please, you know, just get in contact with me. You guys have a bully pulpit here on my show, at least, if you want to reach out and touch the listener community here to this show, which is PRN supposed to be the largest online radio show in the country, maybe the world, I don't know. But we have a pretty good reach. And I know on this show we have 700-800 people who listen to the podcasts after the show. I extend that invitation to you, Don, from the rest of you. If you want to come on again, just give me a call.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Brother Jack. And I definitely appreciate being on the show and telling the story, and definitely appreciate all the public support and community support that we've been getting. And don't stop now, because this fight's not over, and we definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, and it's not a fight just for call center workers and CWA. This is really a fight of saying, let's put a stake in the ground and here and no more. You know, this is it. No more of this outsourcing and offshoring and losing decent-paying jobs. No more of this crummy gig economy jobs that you're giving us and these part-time, low-paid, no-benefit jobs. We once had a country here where everybody enjoyed a little bit of the benefits of economic growth, you know. I remember that, and I also remember how that's disappeared over the last 30 years. And we're in a totally new space here. Okay, this is Alternative Visions. We got the signal. That's the show. Go to CWA.org, CWALocal1400.org, and continue to get reports on this important strike. Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions.